Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, and welcome to a special edition of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you if you're listening this evening. I thought this was an important topic, as many other topics are, but this is very important because we're talking about one of the, unfortunately, largest killers of African-American women today. But there are many fighters out there trying to educate people, trying to support people, and one of those fighters and activists is Ruth Naomi Floyd. Many of you may know her as a singer, a beautiful gospel slash jazz singer, but she has so many other sides to her. One of them is a wonderful photographer, which I was able to see recently at a Leeway Foundation presentation where she showed some of her wonderful portraits. And another part, it's her AIDS activism. You may not know about that. I wasn't aware of that, and that's what drew me or pulled me to have her on the show this evening is that aspect, is her activism in helping people who have HIV/AIDS, singing to them and doing workshops with them and just educating people about HIV/AIDS. And many people, unfortunately, here in the United States and abroad have held and continue to hold myths about HIV/AIDS and how you can get it and who can transmit it and the treatments that are available and all sorts of misconceptions. So that's my draw for having her this evening. Welcome, Ruth.
Oh, thank you, Joy. It's a pleasure and privilege to talk with you.
I found out that Ruth is, we're from the same high school. Yes, you know that high school. Girls High. We both went to the Philadelphia High School for Girls. I'm not sure
what something special about you. I knew.
I think it was the other way around. That's how come maybe I was drawn to you. I mean, you see Girls High girls on the street, and you just know. You're looking at the woman. You're saying, I've seen that face. Is it the walk? Is it the voice? I don't know. Did you go to Girls High?
Yes. The elegance, yeah.
Yes, yes. You know, we have our heads up. Sometimes our noses are a little high, but, you know.
Great school.
No, great school. And I myself was involved in theater when I was there. And and Ruth, you were involved in the music. So tell us
yes.
a little bit how you got drawn into the music. I was watching your video documentary, but please tell the audience about that experience.
Sure. Well, I'm the daughter of a Black Baptist preacher, so we didn't have a lot of jazz in our household, but a lot of classical music. Our parents were very firm about us learning two instruments plus piano, and we mostly played it. I played in, all my sisters and I played in the band and the orchestra, and then they started a jazz band. And so my two sisters played trumpet and trombone, and I played flute in it. But one day they needed for an alumni association event, and they wanted the jazz band to play, and they wanted a singer to sing standards. And so I started doing that, and just fell in love with jazz improvisational music. Also, the All City Jazz band used to rehearse there, and I would just sit outside the room and listen to great, great music. So I just fell in love in high school with that beautiful style of music.
Well, that's one of the great things about Girls High is that a lot of people think it's just the education in terms of, history and science and math and all those things,
yes.
But they have a wonderful art program. I was involved in theater where I was able to go outside of school to work in theater with the Side Hill Playhouse.
Wow.
And you just heard Ruth, she was able to engage in music. So if you have a daughter and you're in Philadelphia and she's kind of fighting you tooth and nail on that, Girls High is not paying me to do this, but I will say it is a very good school and continues to be a very good school, and not just in an academic sense, but if your kid is into the arts, they are supportive there. So,
yes, I was able to go to the Academy of Fine Arts, which is the oldest art college in a university in the country. And I was
mm-hmm.
able to go there for Saturday morning classes, Moore College, as an exchange student, if you will, between Girls High. It was great. It was wonderful.
See?
Wonderful
yeah.
program.
So now that was the beginning, but you came to this point where you're doing gospel jazz.
Yes.
And, you know, when people hear that, they're probably like, huh, what? I heard the first part, or I heard the second part, depending on what you're into. If you're into gospel, you know, you may, you know, listen to a certain type of music, and if you're into jazz, you know, you're thinking, I had recently Christian McBride, he's a famous jazz bassist on here. You may listen to him, or I know you know Bobby Zankel, he's from Philadelphia. I'm familiar with him. He was friends with my parents, actually. And he knew me when I was little. I mean, so you have a certain ear, but gospel jazz. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, when I first started out over 15 years ago, it was really like, you know, people didn't really understand. A lot more people have come into that genre of music. I really like to call what I do almost sacred jazz, because I think the misunderstanding of what I do is that it's a gospel way of singing over jazz music. And really what I do is the text, the lyrics, are based on the gospel of Jesus Christ. I am a Christian, so I'm singing about my faith. But the music and the vocal technique is jazz improvisational music and straight ahead. So we don't necessarily do smooth jazz. But it's that kind of distinct combination. And there's
let's play a little bit out there.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm going to play a little bit of one of your clips from Root to the Fruit. For those of you who are interested, let me just definitely plug her website. And it's very easy, RuthNaomiFloyd.com. Again, that's RuthNaomiFloyd.com. And on her website, you can learn more about her and her music. You can purchase the CDs and learn about some of her workshops also, which we'll talk about in a second. But I want to play one of her clips from Root to the Fruit. This is a traditional song. A lot. So even if you are into gospel, you say, oh, I'm not really into jazz, there's one for you. If you're into jazz, you say, I'm not really into gospel, you know.
Yes, a great African-American spiritual where it really is the root of most American music. It's just amazing and kind of the most horrific, one of the most horrific times in this country, out of this ugly period of oppression and dehumanizing human beings, came this beautiful music that has survived the test of time. So, yeah, that was the great spiritual No Hiding Place.
Right, and I think that some of your music, you point and you probably, it seems you choose them based on the history of the song. Is that true?
Yes.
Definitely. I noticed in your documentary you were talking about, in terms of Steal Away, the song Steal Away, that, you know, people were thinking about maybe a better place to go from Earth, but then also Steal Away was like a code to steal away to get to a better place physically from the oppression of slavery.
Absolutely. They had double meanings. There were some spirituals were just work songs. Some songs had coded meanings of escape songs. Some of them mocked their oppressors as a way to send different messages, and it's just a brilliant style of music. And it's not unlike other music. I think if you listen to the music from the concentration camps, the Nazi camps, there's also a lot of double meaning in their music too, beautiful music. So I think in the midst of any type of oppression, art is a way to really point people to liberation, but also a way of getting messages through. So it's really, really powerful. Really, really powerful. And it's really the root of, it's truly American music. So it's just, that's an added cultural blessing and something I'm very proud and eternally grateful for.
Now, how do you decide, do you write all yours? Do you get help from someone to write your music? Where does your inspiration, other than just from the gospel, is there any other place, life, you know, sure. You're in at the riverfront, if you're at the art museum, what inspires you?
Sure. I mean, I have a pretty eclectic collection of music, from world music to classical music, but in there, there's all different divisions in it, and so I believe in collaboration a lot. I write with other composers, and I write the text or write lyrics with other lyricists. I think I wish I was a really strong poet. I necessarily am not. It either comes or goes. It's not something I can really work and get better at. It either is inspired and it flows through or not. But I really believe in working with other people. There's a wonderful John Jaw from California, a really amazing improvisational poet, and I work with him and work with Keith R. McKinley, another one. He's my business partner. Work with him on lyrics and several other people, my musical director. So there's people that are surrounding me that believe in what I'm doing and are part of what I'm doing that I've created with in the past. I'm excited because on this new body of work, I'm working pretty closely with one or two select people because I really want a same current to flow through all the music. So I'm excited about working closely with one or two people on for a whole project on that. So I'm excited about that.
Now, you mentioned the improvisational person in California. I think you mentioned them when I was at the Leeway presentation.
Yeah.
Now, you received a grant from the Leeway Foundation. The Leeway Foundation, for those of you who don't know, they give out grants to women artists in the Pennsylvania area who are working to make a change with their art.
Yes.
How did you get the grant, and what was your grant for?
My grant was really speaking to women of color, and it was a multidisciplinary thing. In other words, I wrote a special composed instrumental piece, believe it or not, where I was playing piano, playing all the instruments, piano, flute, and at the same time, I also had portraits. Not necessarily of people that are HIV positive or infected or affected by HIV and AIDS, but portraits that spoke, that represented those people. And so it was really a DVD that combined of the women of color, the largest class of people living with HIV around the world. And it was music composed in that. And then I did a whole series at Calcutta House, which is Philadelphia's only AIDS-specific hospice. And we did just a monthly series of musicians that came in and just spoke, particularly to those that were in the hospice home, and just really encouraged them musically with some strong positive messages. The wonderful cellist and composer Monica McIntyre was one of our guests.
Yes, she's very good, very good.
Yeah,
She works with the Black Women's Arts Festival.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes,
So it was just wonderful, wonderful.
Now, you do other types of workshops and lectures, too, on the history of African-American spiritual.
Yeah.
You also do vocal workshops. And if people are interested in, and you can also go to her website if you're interested in bringing her to, you know, your church, your Girl Scout troop, your recreation center, or in terms of vocal. Now, do you still provide training?
Yes, I do, privately.
Okay, privately. Okay. So that's a wonderful. Again, her website is Ruth Naomi Floyd. Now, your images, though, if you are interested in purchasing some of her images or learning more, you did the Veil series. That was very interesting, dark, moody. But it kind of drew you in, like, do I want to look at this? I want to look at this picture. And you use different types of veils over some women and different objects. That website is rnfimages.com. Again, rnfimages.com. And you can learn more about her photography there. Now, you talked at the workshop, the Leeway Foundation workshop, about a portrait of a homeless man.
Yes.
Tell the audience, I know, but the audience doesn't know, your relationship and how you decided to take a picture of this homeless man.
Yes, there is a gentleman that I came to know, and we would sit down, and we would just chat when I was able to. He hung around right around the terminal, not too far from there, between Broad and 11th on Arch, up and down on both sides of the street. I would run into him, and we would just sit and talk, and he was just strikingly beautiful, and his story was just one of, you know, a fire happened. He didn't believe in banks. His money was there. He lost his wife and children, and that trauma and grief, of course, just engulfed him, and he wound up being homeless. And this was a man of great grace and dignity, but he's strikingly handsome, just beautiful. And so I didn't want to say, like, I'm really your friend, but I really want to take your portrait.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You keep saying he's so beautiful, and it's funny. I mean, when you're walking on the street, most of us are looking down,
yes,
you know, at the homeless people. And I know you're going to bring that up about the angle of your photo.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Sure. So I finally, when I felt like he had trusted me, and, you know, we had a strong foundation of friendship, I said, listen, I've been wanting, since I first laid eyes on you, take a portrait. And I did, and I said, and I squatted down, and I on the sidewalk, and we were eye level, and he said, you know, that's how I get my hot dog, that's how I get my coffee, because painters want to paint me, or photographers, and they give me $5 or $10, but no one has ever gotten on the same level. They're always looking down where I'm looking up, and they're higher than me. And he said, why did you get down on the ground to look? And I said, I wanted you to be able to look at the viewer in the photograph straight on, because, you know, just the shape of his man, this is a man who is intelligent but has experienced extreme trauma, and I wanted to give him the dignity that he deserves as a human being. And, you know, we're all in some ways just a paycheck away from homelessness, and so he was just very deeply touched by that, and, you know, never forgot it, and said,
well,
from now on, I'm going to make people, you know, come on my level to take.
Now, you have this thing, you're in love with people's faces and their,
okay,
and their structure. Let me tell you, people, she was drinking in everybody's face at this presentation. I mean, it looked like she was going to come over to your table and touch your face and, you know, stroke you like your grandmother. You know, it's going to be okay, honey, it's going to be okay. But, I mean, seriously, tell me about that, and tell the audience about your love with people's faces.
I am just, I just think human's face is just a canvas. It's so interesting, the angles, the features. You know, we all have different cultural backgrounds, but it's just beautiful. And from a little child, I just always was fascinated. I was trained to be a painter, and I painted pretty well still lives and landscapes, but it was horrible at portraits. And I worked hard. I mean, I worked extremely hard to become a good portrait painter, and it never it just never got past the mediocre level. And so thankfully Zena Adler, former teacher from Philadelphia High School for Girls, finally sat me down and said, think of another medium, Ruth. It's never going to happen. And I did, and arrived at photography, but I just love capturing the human face. I'm fascinated by the canvas of the face, the human face. There's so much story in the eyes, and for me, a lot of times, if you noticed, and you will notice for those of you who are kind enough to go to my website, a lot of the images of the portraits, the eyes are closed, because I think the eyes are so powerful, as they say, the window, you know, you can
to the
see
soul.
The first,
mm-hmm.
Yes. But I think with the eyes closed, then you start to get other indicators of what's going on. When the eyes are not shown and the eyelids are covering them, there's other interesting features that can tell a lot about the person. So, yeah, I just find
Definitely.
Immense joy in creating portraits.
Let me tell you, she has some wonderful, wonderful portraits. I want to play one of the audio clips you sent me, Strange Land, and then we
yes.
can talk about it a little bit, okay?
Sure.
That's very, very hypnotic sound. Tell me about that music and where it came from and how it developed.
Sure. You know, we were doing my fourth album, Fan Into Flame, and we were all in the studio, and we really wanted some instrumental pieces in between, just short tracks in between the vocal tracks with the band, and we all hit together. It's not like the band hits and then I come in later and sing with the track. It's live. The band and I are there. And my wonderful, wonderful, brilliant music director, James Wideman, started thinking about this and said, well, why don't we take this whole theme of Strange Land, you know, that passage from the Bible that says, you know, how we can survive, how can we live, how can we rejoice, how can we praise, how can we exist in the strange land. And so I thought, and I think of the, you know, the Old Testament Hebrews, I certainly think of the enslaved Africans in America and then across the world. And so when we were brought into bondage in another land, and so we just said, you know, we don't need words, we don't necessarily need a voice. And so under his, you know, just brilliance, we all came together and just started, it really started with this kind of improvised outline. And then we, you know, it's like a painter filling in different colors. Canvas is set and there's an outline and you just start putting the colors and it came to life. And then we have another version of it, Strange Line Revisited, which is just straight ahead, pure jazz, straight ahead track.
Well, talking about strange lands, you were in a, some might call a strange land, Kenya.
Yes,
tell us about your trip to Kenya, and she has some beautiful pictures from that, too. Definitely check out her site, rnfimages.com, and you can see some of her photography. But go ahead, tell us about your trip to Kenya.
Sure. It was after doing, you know, about, you know, basically 15 years of HIV and AIDS work stateside. I really felt like, and I'm kind of like a really radical in the work I do on my AIDS work, and so there's still a lot of work to be done in America, but thank goodness there are meds where that you're able to have a pretty quote-unquote stabilized life if you get on the doctor's able to find the right combination or a cocktail, the right medicine. And so I, 10 of those years were spent with death and dying, so those that were you know, preparing to die. And so that's where my particular gifting was at that time. And so I really wanted to go abroad where their crisis was more alarming, if you will. And so I was able to go to Kenya and near Mount Kenya, I go to Maina and Nakuru. And there was a one-room hospital or doctor's office.
Wow. Did you hear that, people? One room. She didn't say, when you think of hospital here in the United States, you think of this massive structure, but she said there was one room in this hospital. Go ahead.
And sometimes there was electricity, and what this young, amazing African doctor had to do to get people tested was unbelievable. So I set time with him and working, and we did HIV AIDS workshops and encouraged the women to get tested, and that's a whole other story. I mean, it's a whole different cultural thing you have to be sensitive to and be deeply aware of. And I think in America we still don't understand why the numbers are the way they are. We just don't have a deeper understanding of what's going on culturally. But we did that in a very respectful way and did workshops and seminars on that. And then, you know, I'm a real big, when you go into a place, another place, that you sit at the feet of the people, so you're not here to save the day. You're not on a white horse riding in.
Right. Here I am, the great American. Right. I know it all, and I'm going to come and educate, you know, you ignorant folk and stuff. Let me play the song I played when I opened the show.
Yeah.
This is one of the songs she played at the workshop. I saw her discussing her photography.
Nina!
Wow. So now that is from your trip in Kenya, correct?
Yes, the orphan young boy, and at this orphanage, a fair amount of them were HIV positive, and he had just the most amazing voice, and sang with so much joy, unbelievable. And that was the part where I was saying, you know, I went and sat at the feet of the culture and had them teach me, and it was a pure exchange, you know. So it was this kind of giving and taking back and forth. And joy, I left Kenya with more than what I gave. So much more. So.
Well, I think that's what a lot of people, when they do visit Africa in the sense of a mission, and they come back so feeling so blessed, so high, if
yes.
you will, almost as if on a drug
yes.
from their experience, and they were not giving, they were not taking, they were giving.
Yes.
So that's the funny thing. When we give, sometimes we get so much back that we don't even know. At the moment, you know, when we're giving, you know, when you give of yourself, and I think altruism and philanthropy is so important. If you are down in your life, go out and give to someone.
Right.
I will say that to anyone who's listening. Again, if you are down in your life, if you feel, you know, why me, woe is me, whatever, be amazed that you think you don't have anything to give. Trust me. You have something that somebody else doesn't have.
Yes.
You know, you take what you have for granted, but somebody else doesn't have that. So when you reach out to the other person, then you see their joy and their light, and that just kind of washes over you. And so what Ruth was doing in Kenya, I definitely
yes.
have heard that before. You know, I want to play some more of your music from Fan Into Flame. You were talking about that. We'll play one of the tracks from there, What We Speak.
No ear has heard, no mind has conceived the things God has planned for those who believe and trust His word. And this God revealed to us the way to salvation comes through the Spirit and truth. No eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived.
Wow. If I did not know English and I heard that song, it sounds like a straight up jazz, you know, tune.
Yes.
You know, but the spirit is there, the word is there, the word of God is there, and that comes through so clearly. So I just want to encourage people to check out also, again, her site is RuthAmelieFloyd.com. We have somebody in the chat room, they're talking about they had lost some people from AIDS. And yes, the issue is AIDS is not a gay disease. AIDS is a human disease that
yes.
affects gays, heterosexuals, everyone, children. And it not only affects children, because I'm a parent, I will tell you I'm very sensitive to children's issues. It not only affects children in terms of they may have AIDS,
yes.
but they lose their parents to AIDS.
Yes.
You know, they lose their parents to AIDS. We have a caller here. We have about 2 minutes left. I just want to take this caller.
Sure.
Good evening. Good evening. Hi, did you have a question for our guest? Hello? Okay, I guess they just wanted to listen or we can't hear them. But children lose their parents to HIV/AIDS. And that's not just in Africa. In America, African-American women are dying at the highest rates of HIV/AIDS. So,
yes, and I want to say that reinfection is on the rise. And people say reinfection. For those that are HIV-positive, they think then that they do not need to protect themselves when they're being intimate because they say, I'll just be intimate with someone that's HIV positive. And what's happening is different strands of the virus are then reinfecting each other, and then it's harder to find the meds, and then it just catapults. And the numbers are slowly rising. Senior citizens, young people, between the age of 13 and 25, every hour, 2 to 3 young people are becoming HIV positive.
Crazy.
You know, you look, it's just in every sector of our society. And so it's been, you know, we just celebrated World AIDS Day, and my heart was grieved. There was not a lot of events given
going
away
on, yeah.
years ago.
Ruth, I'm sorry. We only have about a minute left, but I want to thank you, and I'll probably try to have you back on the show, and we can talk a little more about the issue of AIDS. I had the National Minority AIDS Council on here recently, but I want to thank you for coming on this evening. I want to thank all the listeners, and for those of you listening to me on a regular basis, this Saturday I'll be talking about black marriages. Are there any happy black marriages? Yes, there are, and there was a movie created about some happy black marriages in America. So, Ruth, I just want to thank you again. Check out her website, RuthAmelieFloyd.com or rnfimages.com to see her photography. And I wish you all the best with your music and your photography and your activism.
Oh, thank you, Joy, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you. Okay, everyone have a lovely evening, and I'll see everyone else on Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern.
Here's an important message from Reverend Dr. Jeremiah A. Wright, Jr. senior pastor of Trinity United Church of Christ.
Did you know that more than half of all the new HIV/AIDS cases reported are among African Americans? Our men, our women, and our children are at risk. We must put aside our fears, exercise our faith, and put an end to this deadly disease. Encourage testing. Learn more about HIV and AIDS.
For testing locations, contact the CDC National STD and AIDS Hotline at 1-800-342-AIDS.